The following is a review of the portfolio management principles designed to address the learning outcome statements set forth by CFA Institute. This topic is also covered in Portfolio Risk and Return, Part 2. The first LOS is to describe the implications of combining a risk-free asset with a portfolio of risky assets. Because a risk-free asset has zero standard deviation and zero correlation of returns with those of a risky portfolio, the standard deviation of a portfolio containing a risky asset and a risk-free asset is equal to the weight of the risky asset times its standard deviation. Our result is that the risk, as measured by standard deviation of returns, and the expected return of portfolios with varying weights in the risk-free asset and a risky portfolio, can be plotted as a line that begins at the risk-free rate of return and extends through the risky portfolio. The next LOS requires us to explain the capital allocation line, or CAL, and the capital market line, or CML. The line of possible portfolio risk and return combinations, given the risk-free rate and the risk and return of a portfolio of risky assets, is referred to as the capital allocation line, or CAL. For an individual investor, the best CAL is the one that offers the most preferred set of possible portfolios in terms of their risk and return. If each investor has different expectations about the expected returns of, standard deviations of, or correlations between risky asset returns, each investor will have a different optimal risky asset portfolio and a different CAL. A simplifying assumption underlying modern portfolio theory is that investors have homogeneous expectations, which means they all have the same estimates of risk, return, and correlations with other risky assets for all risky assets. Under this assumption, all investors face the same efficient frontier of risky portfolios and will all have the same optimal risky portfolio and CAL. Under the assumption of homogeneous expectations, the optimal CAL for any investor is the one that is just tangent to the efficient frontier. Depending on their preferences for risk and return, investors may choose different portfolio weights for the risk-free asset and the risky portfolio. Every investor, however, will use the same risky portfolio. When this is the case, that portfolio must be the market portfolio of all risky assets, because all investors that hold any risky assets hold the same portfolio of risky assets. Under the assumption of homogeneous expectations, this optimal CAL for all investors is termed the capital market line, or CML. Along this line, expected portfolio return is a linear function of portfolio risk. The y-intercept of this line is the risk-free rate, and the slope of this line is the expected return on the market portfolio minus the risk-free rate divided by the standard deviation of returns on the market portfolio. The intuition of this relation is straightforward. An investor who chooses to take on no risk will earn the risk-free rate. The difference between the expected return on the market and the risk-free rate is termed the market risk premium. We can rewrite the CML equation as expected return on the portfolio equals the risk-free rate plus the market risk premium times the ratio of portfolio risk to market risk. We can see that an investor can expect to get 1 unit of market risk premium in additional return above the risk-free rate for every unit of market risk that the investor is willing to accept. If we assume that investors can not only lend at the risk-free rate, but also borrow at the risk-free rate, they can select portfolios to the right of the market portfolio. Investors who believe market prices are informationally efficient often follow a passive investment strategy, investing in an index of risky assets that serves as a proxy for the market portfolio, and allocating a portion of their investable assets to a risk-free asset, such as short-term government securities. In practice, many investors and portfolio managers believe their estimates of security values are correct and market prices are incorrect. Such investors will not use the weights of the market portfolio, but will invest more than the market weights in securities that they believe are undervalued, and less than the market weights in securities which they believe are overvalued. This is referred to as active portfolio management to differentiate it from a passive investment strategy that utilizes a market index for the optimal risky asset portfolio. The next LOS asks us to explain systematic and non-systematic risk, including why an investor should not expect to receive additional return for bearing non-systematic risk. When an investor diversifies across assets that are not perfectly correlated, the portfolio's risk is less than the weighted average of the risks of the individual securities in the portfolio. The risk that is eliminated by diversification is called unsystematic risk, or unique, diversifiable, or firm-specific risk. Since the market portfolio contains all risky assets, it must be a well-diversified portfolio. All the risk that can be diversified away has been. The risk that remains cannot be diversified away and is called systematic risk, or non-diversifiable, or market risk. The concept of systematic risk applies to individual securities as well as to portfolios. Some securities' returns are highly correlated with overall market returns. Examples of firms that are highly correlated with market returns are luxury goods manufacturers such as Ferrari automobiles and Harley-Davidson motorcycles. These firms have high systematic risk, that is, they are very responsive to market or systematic changes. Other firms, such as utility companies, respond very little to changes in the systematic risk factors. These firms have very little systematic risk. Hence, total risk, as measured by standard deviation, can be broken down into its component parts. Total risk equals systematic risk plus unsystematic risk. You do not actually have to buy all the securities in the market to diversify away unsystematic risk. Academic studies have shown that as you increase the number of stocks in a portfolio, the portfolio's risk falls toward the level of market risk. One study showed that it only took about 12 to 18 stocks in a portfolio to achieve 90% of the maximum diversification possible. Another study indicated it took 30 securities. Whatever the number, it is significantly less than all the securities. Once you get to 30 or so securities in a portfolio, the standard deviation remains essentially constant. The remaining risk is systematic or non-diversifiable risk. We will develop this concept later when we discuss beta, a measure of systematic risk. One important conclusion of capital market theory is that equilibrium security returns depend on a stock's or a portfolio's systematic risk, not its total risk as measured by standard deviation. One of the assumptions of the model is that diversification is free. The reasoning is that investors will not be compensated for bearing risk that can be eliminated at no cost. If you think about the costs of a no-load index fund compared to buying individual stocks, diversification is actually very low cost, if not actually free. The implications of this conclusion are very important to asset pricing. The riskiest stock, with risk measured as standard deviation of returns, does not necessarily have the greatest expected return. Consider a biotech stock with one new drug product that is in clinical trials to determine its effectiveness. If it turns out that the drug is effective and safe, stock returns will be quite high. If, on the other hand, the subjects in the clinical trials are killed or otherwise harmed by the drug, the stock will fall to approximately zero, and returns will be quite poor. This describes a stock with high standard deviation of returns or high total risk. The high risk of our biotech stock, however, is primarily from firm-specific factors, so its unsystematic risk is high. Since market factors such as economic growth rates have little to do with the eventual outcome for this stock, systematic risk is a small portion of the total risk of the stock. Capital market theory says that the equilibrium return on this stock may be less than that of a stock with much less firm-specific risk, but more sensitivity to the factors that drive the return of the overall market. an established manufacturer of machine tools may not be a very risky investment in terms of total risk, but may have a greater sensitivity to market or systematic risk factors, such as economic growth rates, than our biotech stock. Given this scenario, the stock with more total risk, the biotech stock, has less systematic risk and will therefore have a lower equilibrium rate of return, according to capital market theory. Note that holding many biotech firms in a portfolio will diversify away the firm's specific risk. Some will have blockbuster products and some will fail, but you can imagine that when 50 or 100 such stocks are combined into a portfolio, the uncertainty about the portfolio return is much less than the uncertainty about the return of a single biotech firm stock. To sum up, unsystematic risk is not compensated in equilibrium because it can be eliminated for free through diversification. Systematic risk is measured by the contribution of a security to the risk of a well-diversified portfolio and the expected equilibrium return, or required return, on an individual security will depend on its systematic risk.